Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This Saturday at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center, one of the treasures in Milwaukee, the second Midwest Women's Sailing Conference will be taking place. There will be classes for beginners to advanced racers on topics ranging from introduction to sailing to safety on the water, diesel engine troubleshooting to nighttime navigation. And it's limited to 100 women. There are just a few openings left, which I imagine we may fill by the end of this hour. We're going to be talking about sailing this hour of the program. It happens to be a love of mine. I haven't sailed for years, but one of the most wonderful memories of my life was I took this course in sailing on Lake Geneva years and years ago, and then I called my dad and said, "Dad, we need to get a boat." So we bought this little old boat, and we sailed it all over the state of Wisconsin, and it's a memory that will be with me forever. We have two guests with us this hour. Nancy Early is joining us by phone. She's the keynote speaker at the Midwest Conference this weekend. The first day that 12-year-old Nancy Early learned to sail, she knew what she wanted to do for the rest of her life. She was an Ohio Girl Scout, and she was in a sailing unit. She went to Mystic Seaport Youth Mariner programs, intercollegiate racing, and the purchase of her first sailboat in 1975. She was in college when she first lived aboard full-time, and then working in Seattle, she bought her second boat, which is a 36-foot boat. She decided she wanted to sail around the world. I love this. And she and three friends joined her as financial co-owners of the boat. She completed her U.S. Coast Guard 50-ton Master of Oceans and 100-ton Master Near Coastal licenses. She's also an advanced ham radio operator. And after the first circumnavigation in 1995, she started teaching women sailing full-time, and for nearly 40 years, she has shared her love of boats and sailing with other women as teacher, advocate, and international public speaker. Nancy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. You know, when I listen to all that about my history, it's quite a, it takes a while. surprises me myself.
Took a while to get around the world, too, huh?
Well, you go pretty slow. Yes, you do.
Yeah, that's the way to travel. That is the way to travel. Also joining us in our studios in Milwaukee, Allison Kent. Allison is a senior in high school at Brookfield East, and she's a member of Team Rafiki, which is competing in this year's J30 North American Championships. I'm sure that she will as well be a part of the conference this weekend. Allison, thank you so much for coming to our studio. When did you start sailing?
I started sailing from the moment I was born. My parents put me on boats. Yep, I've been sailing ever since. They started taking me on distance races when I was about three. All my childhood pictures are on boats, around boats, so forever.
And tell me what this J30 North American Championship is. What kind of boat is it, J30?
A J30 is a 30-foot boat, we participated in the North Americans last September in Annapolis. And what it is you race against boats that are exactly the same as ours. So there's no difference between the boats, so everyone has an equal chance. And we got my sister, two other sisters, Kate and Elizabeth Hayes, and I got invited to sail with former national champions. So it was extremely exciting. We placed fifth out of 19 boats, and it was just fun for us and everyone there to see four teenage girls come from Milwaukee and go out to Annapolis and place so high in such a national regatta.
Do you sail Michigan usually? Is that where you are?
Yes, we are out of South Shore Yacht Club, and that's the Milwaukee Bay area, and that's where I sail every day in the summer.
Every day.
Yes.
Oh, I'm envious. That sounds great. There's something quite, I think, poetic, Nancy, about sailing. It's the sun, it's the water, and it's the wind, and being able to use the wind. It just is, it's an exhilarating thing to do when you're racing. It can also be very challenging, but also just darned elemental in many ways, don't you think?
Well, you know, I just have to mention one thing, and then I'd like to respond to that. You all know that I was born in Milwaukee, don't you? So it must produce women sailors.
I didn't know you were born in Milwaukee. Did you sail Michigan when you were young, too?
No, I was too young before when we moved away.
Ah.
But anyway, so that's just a piece of my history.
I'm glad to know that.
It's in here. You know, I find, and you may too, Allison, when you get on long-distance ocean racing, if you do that, that when you're out on the ocean, it's sort of like being back in the womb. Everything's moving, and you are completely, really out of touch of any kind of help, essentially. And so you have to rely on the resources.
You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. We are experiencing technical difficulties with our signal from Milwaukee. We will return you to Conversations with Kathleen Dunn as soon as the problem is fixed. Thank you.
They said, you know, you have to not just write it down. You have to tell us when you're going to do this. So I figured, okay, 10 years when you're 30 seems like a lifetime. So I said, well, I'm going to be doing it when I'm 40. And wouldn't you know, I left when I was 39.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you did it.
Yes, but I didn't spend every minute planning to do it, you know, for those 10 years. It just sort of grew inside me. And you got to be careful what you can envision, you know.
Is that a dream of yours, to travel around the world?
Yes, it definitely is. My dad sailed around the world, and so...
Really?
Yes, and I got front row view of the difficulties, the views you get when you go around the world, how much fun it is, and... I don't know if I necessarily want to race, but I definitely would enjoy sailing around the world.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how difficult a thing it is to do. There's a lot that you have to prepare for. You may not have any wind. You may have way too much wind. You may have tsunamis. I mean, you really don't know what you're going to encounter when you take that kind of journey. It's filled with unknown risks, isn't it, Nancy?
There are some unknown risks, but most of the risks are known, Kathleen. And there's a kind of a well-trodden path around the world. People call it the Milk Run through the South Pacific.
What's it called?
And the Milk Run.
The Milk
Run.
You
know, like in the old days when the milk truck used to bring milk to the houses.
I remember those days.
It's kind
yes.
of a well-trodden path. Okay?
Right.
So there's this Milk Run route around the world, which takes you kind of through the... through the South Pacific and then through the canals. I'm not sure. I think I'd go around South Africa now because of piracy in the Red Sea. And then there's certain seasons when the weather is got the least chance of storms. So you find that there's sort of a pack of boats going the same time in this chain around the world. And we all kind of keep in touch on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out from the boats ahead of you, you know, where a good place to get safe water is or fuel. And if you don't want to know all that and you want to be kind of an explorer, you just turn the radio off.
Which is a fine thing to do at times. Allison, what kinds of skills have you had to learn to be able to be a competitive sailor?
Well, learning how to sail, it's a completely different language. You start from the bottom up. And... basically, I learn something new every single time I go out sailing. Even now, I've been sailing for 18 years, and I learn something brand new. And what I had to learn this past summer was how to kind of do all the jobs on the boat by myself. Because my sister and I sailed across Lake Michigan, just the two of us, on our J30.
You did?
Yes.
Wonderful.
It was very windy. And you, in that situation, you kind of need to know not just one position on the boat. You need to know kind of how to do everything in case something were to go wrong. So I think, that was a learning experience for me, because I specialize, my job on my boat is the bow of the boat, is the front. That's kind of my domain. That's where I work. And, during the summer, I needed to learn how to do everything else. So if something were to happen and it was just my sister and I would know how to do that. So I think that's important on a boat. You need to know not only your job, but others, so you can help out.
Mm-hmm. What did you need to learn, Nancy, to go around the world? Or what do you need to learn to be a really good sailor? For instance, do you know the stars?
I know some of the stars. Fortunately, electronic navigation today makes that not necessary so much anymore. Mm-hmm. You can learn, you can do celestial navigation without memorizing the stars. Okay, there are kind of charts that help you with that. We just did celestial navigation on the very first passage in 1989, and then from then on used the GPS and the, you know, the handier ways of navigating. There's weather you need to learn about. There's all the boat systems, which there are a lot of. The sailing part turns out to be just kind of a small part of it, because most of our boats have a self-steering system on them. So you get the boat, the sails set right for the wind angle, and then let go, essentially, attach the steering aid. And it'll keep the boat headed with the same angle to the wind.
Hmm.
So you change something. So the wind changes a little bit, the boat will change its heading, and you can then readjust things and get back to where you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of sit there and let the boat take you around the world. I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but in the trade winds and for quite a bit of the ocean passages, that's what it's like. Allison, you'll love this. For from Hawaii to Tahiti, I was 24 days on the same tack. I didn't have to tack ever.
Remarkable.
Wow. Put a little bit of sail in or a little bit of sail out, and that was it. It was,
wow.
You know. And when you're sailing close to the coast, Kathleen, there's a lot of switching the sails around and adjusting and things, and you don't have to do that so much on the ocean.
Wow. So what'd you do, read a book?
Sometimes, but we keep the boat, essentially manned 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
We don't stop in the middle. So some of the daytime, if you've had a night watch, you're probably spending some time sleeping in the day and cooking, and everything takes longer. You know, you can't set your cup of coffee down because it's going to leave. So even making a cup of coffee, in the first passage, we liked filtered coffee, where you put the little filter on top of the coffee cup and put the coffee in there and pour the water through. Well, it took two people to make that coffee. One to hold the cup, one to hold the filter, and one to pour the water in there. And then chances are the water wouldn't stay in the filter. So just to give you an idea, everything takes a lot longer. And it's the constant motion, which is what people don't really expect, I think. And there's often seasickness for the first few days, and then everybody seems to get over that.
They do. That's something you get over?
Uh-huh.
Most people do.
Yeah, I think your inner ear just finally realizes, okay, this is what life is going to be like now.
Oh,
and it learns how to cope with it.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Most
people don't spend a whole 3 days out there trying to get over it, though. But if you're on an ocean passage, that's your only choice.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. The Midwest Women's Sailing Conference is taking place this weekend, actually, in Milwaukee at the Community Sailing Center, which is a wonderful facility. If you like the water, if you want to learn how to sail, believe me, you can learn how to do that, get certified, and then use the boats that are there. It's a great community resource, and there aren't very many in the country like this. So this is taking place this weekend, and we're talking this hour of the program with Nancy Early, who is the keynote speaker at the conference, and she's circumnavigated the world two times as the captain of an all-female crew. She was born in Milwaukee, so of course she looked at Lake Michigan and said, I want to sail. Even though she didn't do that, but she'll do that this weekend. She sailed everywhere, all around the world. Allison Kent, you just heard her talk about sailing across Lake Michigan with her sister, which is terrific, during high winds. She's a senior at Brookfield East, and she's a member of Team Rafiki, which is competing in this year's J30 North American Championships. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, if you want to use that, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Sail away with me, honey. Put my heart in your hand.
I don't know if this continues much longer. I think we ought to just hang it up and go out to Lake Michigan, you know. There's a thing about sailing that I found it when I was a sailor, that you'd look at the day, you'd look at the wind, and no matter what you were doing, you always felt, darn, I should be sailing. I just should be sailing. It kind of gets to you, doesn't it, Allison?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you started sailing yet this year?
No, I have not, but I'm dying to get out there. I was at my yacht club the other day on Mother's Day, and it was just beautiful. And all I wanted to do was throw my boat in the water and go for a sail.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine the season will be earlier this year because we've had such perfect weather.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, or are you comfortable being on the land, Nancy?
Oh, I think I have gills, Kathleen. Fortunately, I have a house where I can look at the water.
Oh.
That helps considerably. And we sail year-round here in the Northwest. We don't get the icy conditions that you have there. It's a little dark in the winter, but we still go out. So I can do it whenever I have an urge.
That's nice. Is that one of the reasons you live in that part of the country?
I guess it is. I just need to be by the water, mm-hmm. You know. Some people in California feel like we're crazy because it's so cold up here, and they sail year-round as though it was summer year-round. But I like the seasons.
Mm-hmm. And why do you feel, I know a lot of people feel this way, and not all of us can live next to the water, but why do you feel you have to be next to water?
I think there's just something very tranquil about it for me. You know, I think you know this, that it's like 70% of the planet is water, and also 70% of our bodies are water.
Right.
That's an interesting concept. So it just feels right to me. I'm a Pisces. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Jeff in Madison, our first caller. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. First of all, Kathleen, shame on you for doing a show on sailing as I'm sitting here trying to get this paper written at my desk. Shame on you.
Sorry.
I grew up, I'm here in Madison, but I grew up on Costa Maine in Booth Bay Harbor, and I was listening to your guest talking about, what was it, a 24-day tack? On, or
24 days on one tack, that's right.
And I grew up, I learned to sail with a little 13.5-foot Old Town white cap that I learned when I lashed the tiller down, and I could sit up in the bow with my back against the mast. And, you know, as the sun was going down, my last tack was, it wasn't like that. It was an hour or so. But going home, I could literally, with my legs over the side, this tiny boat, it was a sloop. It had a jib on it. I could just lean slightly to the left, or right, sorry, port or starboard, and actually keep that boat on the tack and just sit there sailing into the sunset going home. And that same boat, not my boat, but the same model, in 1960, when did John Glenn circle the Earth? 62? There was a fellow who sailed one of those from Falmouth, Mass to Falmouth, England, and it held the record for the smallest boat crossing in the Atlantic for a long time. This guy sailed a 13.5-foot little sloop across the Atlantic, and nobody heard of it because he arrived just as John Glenn took off.
So
his fame was very short-lived, and I ended up sailing in Booth Bay on a friend's boat. He had a Concordia, which was just the most beautiful sailboat. I think still is the most beautiful sailboat in the world. But anyway, Kathleen, shame on you.
I'm sorry,
and don't
Jeff.
Ever do this again.
Do you sail now, Jeff?
I do. We live over by Lake Wingra, and they have a boat concession, so I go down there, and they have there's a number of boats, small boats, but whenever my folks and siblings and everything are back in Maine, so whenever I get back there, I try to get on something and get out. Yeah, no,
right.
It is. Your guest is living my dream, and it just makes me green as I sit here with my keyboard.
Well, Jeff, you know, this afternoon, maybe you need to think about what you want to do with the rest of your life.
Talk to my wife. All right.
thanks very much.
Thank you for the show.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Tell me about this business of racing a boat and whether or not you get equal pleasure and a different mindset for racing, because it really is challenging to race a boat, particularly if you've got heavy weather around you. Is that thrilling to you? Do you also equally enjoy just, you know, the wind at your back?
I love racing. It's competitive physically and mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And it does give me a thrill more than cruising. And I would prefer to go out and race than cruise, but of course I'm not going to complain about going out on a Sunday afternoon. But it is something that, I think everyone should try at least once because, you literally can see everyone around you. You can see what they're doing. And it's just, you know, how do I make it go faster? Should we tack? What should we do with the sails? You know, every little thing counts. And I think that's something really hard to learn, all of those little things. And that's something that I always strive to learn more during the summer. And like I said before, I don't know all of them. That's why you have crew. You depend on them. Everyone contributes to mm-hmm. racing. And I love racing. I think it's so fun. I do several races every week. There's women's races on Mondays. I do lessons still through South Shore. So I'm still getting coached by my sister, actually, is one
really?
Of the instructors.
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
And then Wednesday nights, everyone goes out and races. And also Saturdays. There's regattas on Saturdays. So
nice.
My summer is full of racing, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. There's also, you can get pretty strong, Nancy, as a racer, but also just as a sailor, you really use your arms and your legs, and your body gets much stronger, I think, sailing.
I think with the stuff that Allison is doing, that is true. The modern cruising boats these days make it so that we can go keep doing this until our geriatric years have come upon us. Yeah, because they have things like electric winches, and you put the sail up and you don't have to take it down if you're going across the ocean for, you know, 3 weeks maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gotten much easier for people who want to do it, even as they getting, you know, not young and athletic.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, we don't have
electric winches. I needed to hear this hour.
It's yeah. a way you can have adventure even as you're aging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to be physically strong and fit to, like, hiking up mountains or anything like that. You can still go seeking adventure kind of from in your slippers almost.
Dan is next in Brookfield. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Listening here, what a delightful program. It's so great to hear that more and more women are getting interested in sailing and all aspects of it, the racing, the cruising. And I grew up at South Shore like Allison, and it took me all the way, other than San Diego now that I'm here working on a project. I just finished a West Coast winter cruise through the Channel Islands National Park on my 38-foot 1955 sailboat, and I was laughing about making the coffee. Now, imagine doing all of that, but I had to heat my water on the barbecue grill. And, no self-steering, so while I have 1 foot over the tiller, but the main reason for my call, we've had on this California coast from in the Bay Area down to the Coronado Islands off of Tijuana, we've had three tragedies with 13 deaths, and all of them, the end result, no life jackets.
Mm.
I'm wondering, mm-hmm. hoping, and sorry if I'm using you guys as my soapbox, with the conference, I'm wondering and hoping that you're addressing that. You know, they've got these modern lightweight inflatable, automatic inflatable life jackets. They're not as cumbersome as the old ones. And I'm just, you know, hoping that that's being addressed for racers and cruisers because, you know, accidents happen and it happens in an instant. So anyway, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I know the Community Sailing Center is very big on this. You can't be on the dock without a life preserver on.
No, I actually work. I teach at the Sailing Center over the summer, and I always have my life jacket on all the time. It comes everywhere with me in the summer, even on my own boat. I wear it all the time. It used to be a family rule of mine. It still is a family, but when we were younger and we didn't know any better, it was you had to have your life jacket on at all times. And it's just something, it should be like buckling your seatbelt when you get in a car. It's, you know, you throw on your life jacket when you get on your boat, because like he said, you just never know, and accidents can happen in an instant. You just never know.
Exactly. Thanks, yeah,
and
Dean.
I support that too. I'm a life jacket evangelist, if you will.
Good.
And we wear them on, we don't wear them on the dock, and we don't wear them when the boat is tied up to the dock usually, but anytime it's on its way, the life jacket's on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a matter of course. You just wear your life jacket. Right. You're on the water. Water is a powerful force.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan, for the call. Heather in Madison. Hi, Heather.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to say that my husband and I retired early and bought a sailboat, a 45-foot sloop, and we sailed from North Carolina down to Grenada, which is near Venezuela, and have recently returned to Georgia. The purpose of my call is that we're from Madison, Wisconsin, and I just don't see a lot of Midwesterners that make the leap to the ocean. And it is not an easy leap in all means, because when we did do that, we had to learn about tides and currents and some things that we didn't have to mess with on the inland lakes. But what a rewarding leap it's been. And I would just like to encourage lots of folks from the Midwest to make that stretch.
Nancy.
Yes, I got a comment. My friends Skip Rodriguez and Wendy were from Madison, and they outfitted their boat and went across the Atlantic over to the Mediterranean, and then I met them when they were at the far eastern end of the Mediterranean, and their Valiant 40, and then they sailed it back across the Atlantic to the Caribbean, back up to Madison, and then, well, of all things, had it shipped out here to the Northwest.
Oh.
So they've got their boat in the Pacific Northwest, and we run into each other occasionally. I didn't meet them till they were already over there in Crete or someplace like that. But that's another couple who've done it. It's quite doable. And, yes, you can get your boat outfitted anywhere. I mean, especially with the Internet these days and all the ways you can get things shipped to you, it's easier than it used to be.
Is there a way to do this? I mean, you look at a lot of the yacht clubs here and you see some boats that are very, very expensive. Is there a way to do this sport if you're a person of modest means? Nancy?
I'm a person of modest means.
Okay. Are you?
Yes, and I was to begin this with. So my way when I was young was to find other women who I could talk into doing this with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we shared the cost. A boat is probably the most expensive purchase most people make besides their house. All right. So if you can think of it as a second home or a little second cabin or something like that, it's doable. Some people just forget the house and just go ahead and buy the boat and live on that. That's what you do if you really have modest means, which is the way I had to do it. Okay. I didn't have a house, so I could.
Oh, you didn't. You just lived on the boat.
Yeah, well, sure, of course we did for the circumnavigations. By the way, each of those was 5 years long.
Oh, my gosh, really?
I did them back to back, so I was kind of out there for 10 years.
Wow.
And lots of different women came on board the boat. Anyway, but they just did some stories in Latitude 38 over the winter about, you know, how cheap can you cruise, actually. And so I think about the down to the bottom of the barrel was on around $700 a month, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they went to Mexico and they ate the local food and anchored out and just had to buy a little fuel here and there and some boat repairs. They haven't asked what's the most expensive amount of money you can spend cruising. But we spent, I think, around on the second circumnavigation, around $2,000 a month. So that's like $24,000 a year. That is that's not inconceivable. But we had to buy the boat outright first.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you kind of get hit with a high insurance premium because the bank wants to insure its asset, which it has no control of anymore because it's out there in the ocean somewhere.
Hmm. So you were, I'm amazed you were on the water. Well, you stopped and had some food and saw some places, but a 10-year adventure, that's incredible.
That's right. And it was, I figured out probably 25% of the time I was actually on the sea, okay, going from place to place. And that means 75% were anchored or in a port somewhere or just kind of noodling up or down a coast or among some islands.
Wow. Remarkable. Allison, what do you want to do when you're out of school?
You know, I'm not sure yet. I'm majoring in criminal justice.
Oh, really?
So that doesn't necessarily go along with sailing. However, I believe sailing's a lifelong sport. Like she said, there's ways to get around old age or, you know, if you're not the young person you used to be, there's still ways to do it. That's what I love about sailing. So it's not like soccer where, you know, you can't kick the ball anymore. And so I'm definitely going to stay in the sailing community. I think, you know, when I have children, I'll probably raise them just like I was raised right from the beginning around boats. I think that's the way to go. I mean, I did go through a phase where I was like, well, I don't want to do sailing anymore. Well, I got over that pretty quickly. I stopped soccer to go sailing last summer, and it was, I personally think, one of the best decisions because I spent all my summer sailing instead of having to share between soccer and sailing. And that really made me realize that, you know, when I'm older, I want to invest in my own boat. I want to have my own Wednesday nights, you know. I want to live the life of a sailor even when I'm older. And I'm going to be on the sailing team. I'm going to University of Minnesota next year.
Oh, you are? Great.
Yep. And there's a sailing team there. And I have every intention to be on that. I mean, I never want to stop sailing. I mean, I just think it's so unique. You know, it's not something everybody does. So it sets you aside from, like, Brookfield. Not very many people sail. And it's something I have that's my own.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's something very special. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And it's a wonderful camaraderie you can have with people. You can be on a boat with people who do completely different walks of life than you.
Oh, yeah.
Very different ages. It's a real cross-generational kind of event as well. Different income levels, different everything. It's a uniting thing, I think.
Absolutely. You're friends with the sailing community, you know. You find someone who sails, you're friends with them. It's just, it's something about the way we hold ourselves and, I mean, just the love of sailing that mm-hmm. we share really mm-hmm. brings people together.
Yeah. And I'll bet you have stories like that all over the world, don't you, Nancy?
Well, yes. And in fact, I was just thinking back on the travels. You can have this boat, this little boat that you're on, it's kind of a magic carpet, if you will. And in my world, I want my magic carpet to be a happy ship, which means not only do we get to the other end, but everybody has enjoyed themselves. You know, it's pleasure boating, it's called. It's supposed to be fun. So in that means there's team building going on, there's respecting the other people on board, and sometimes there's stressful times because a storm's coming or maybe with Allison, it's getting to the mark and you got to get the spinnaker down or whatever. So people have a different kind of anxiety than we have in our regular everyday work life. Okay, it's physical. And we're kind of sheltered from that usually in this day and age. So you get through that anxiety time and that brings you closer together usually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's where I was saying you get these kind of profound changes in yourself out there. And I found one of those things was I felt here we have this finite amount of resources on the boat. It's, you know, people jam it full of however much stuff it can hold and then off you go and cross your fingers. Well, still, we always seem to have what we needed. And it was because of the philosophy, I guess, of abundance that's out there. And you know, even if our boat didn't have this part that we needed, when we get to the next anchorage, somebody else would have it, and they would just give it to you.
Hmm. Oh, nice.
Further down the way, we would have something that somebody else would need, and we would just pass it forward, I guess they call that. So also, you're kind of an ecologist, you know. we use very little energy on the boats out there,
right.
And you were kind of very sensitive to plastic in the oceans and not throwing your garbage plastic over there.
Right.
I also think that there's a concept that I like, that I felt like I was a traveler rather than a tourist. So, in a tourist, which I have been, I'm staying at hotels with like-minded people and eating the food that I'm used to and all that. And when I'm a traveler, I'm like a turtle on a boat. I've got my own bed and my own dishes, and I go by the food that the local people eat, and I'm more in their culture, which was really, really nice. And we would stay, you know, for a month sometimes, some places, and get to sometimes go to church or school with the local families and things. Just great.
Oh, what a lovely description. I like that. Let's go to Jean in Oshkosh. Hi, Jean.
Hey, Kathleen and ladies. I do have a very legitimate question about voting, but I have to share this vignette. If you recall when John Gerda was on, I built something of a bridge. Being on the south side of Milwaukee, you're aware of Lake Michigan. So I said, I can build something like that that'll float. And I spent half the summer building a sailboat, 17 feet long.
Really?
And then we took it from where we lived on a coaster wagon all the way down to South Shore, which was mentioned earlier in the program.
Uh-huh.
And we launched the boat, and I got into it, and in about 37 seconds, I did a 180.
Oh, my.
And I realized that perhaps its life was meant to be a flower box instead of a boat. But I have been blessed being here on Lake Winnebago. We do different kinds of sailing than the ladies have been talking about. But I had a Cape Dory 17. Anyhow, my legitimate question is, could you discuss the difference in handling virtues and deficiencies of monohulls versus trihulls? And I'll hang up.
All right. Thank you, Jean, very much.
Yeah. Kathleen.
Thanks. Nancy.
Yeah, I have not a great depth of knowledge about trihulls, but I have some. And one of the things is that I don't want to get too technical about this, but when we sail our monohulls, which is the kind of boat I have and the kind of boat Allison has, we can take the wind at about 45 degrees off of the bow from straight ahead, and we can sail 45 degrees off of straight up wind on either side of it. Is that paint enough of a picture?
Yes.
As you go faster and faster, okay, that brings the apparent wind further forward on the boat, and your sail won't be full unless it's at about 45 degrees. So some of the boats that are made to go really fast can't go very well upwind because they go so fast that they bring the apparent wind too far forward, and that makes them turn off away from going upwind.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to go upwind, okay, and you want to go, say, around the world in a trimaran where you don't have to go upwind very much because we go with the wind, it would be a very fast way to go.
Mm.
However, the times you have to go, because there's not so much wetted surface, which kind of slows you down.
And Jean reminds me, calling from Oshkosh, that I got a note yesterday from a sailor in Oshkosh who reminds us that the Oshkosh Schools Sail Week will be May 25th through June 6th in Menominee Park Beach. 9 schools, 8 days, 600 students on Lake Winnebago, and it's the largest school day sailing program in North America. So you may want to Google that. That's an event taking place in Wisconsin a little bit later than the Midwest Women's Sailing Conference, which is taking place this weekend at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center, McKinley Marina. Nancy Early is the keynote speaker. There are lots of classes going on, beginners to advanced racers, you name the topic, and there it is. All of the instructors will be women. It's limited to 100 women, and there are just a few openings left. You can find Midwest Women's Sailing Conference on Facebook if you are motivated to go to this. And who wouldn't be after this hour if you have any interest in sailing? Jean, thanks so much for the call. We need to pause for a moment, and we will return. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome more of your phone calls, 800-486-8655. Here's an email that's come in. Jeff writes in, wanted to give a plug for a great book written by Allison's teammate's father, Nick Hayes, called Saving Sailing, which is a great book centered on family sailing. And you must know about that.
Yes. Very, very well-written book. It's it basically talks about the importance of sailing as a family. The Hayes family is very close friends of ours, and Kate is my age, and Elizabeth is a freshman in high school right now, and we've been sailing with them since we've been sailing. I mean, their family program is the same as ours, and I think Nick highlights that in his book. I recommend, it's a good read, so I recommend it if you're interested in knowing the relationship of families on boats.
And you've written a book, haven't you, Nancy?
I would call it a booklet, Kathleen.
Oh, call it a book. It's all right.
Booklet, a booklet called 101 Hints for Circumnavigators.
Oh, great.
It's just little tidbits and things that I wish I'd known before I had left, or things I picked up along the way.
Well, tell me a couple of them.
All right. One of my favorite ones is how to get rid of cockroaches on your boat. Because I wasn't used to those, and then, you know, we didn't have them in the Northwest, but you get them down in the tropics. And people put poison out and all this, and they do bombs and all this other stuff. It's a very clever way to do it. If you don't have on your own boat a portable generator, gasoline-powered generator, somebody in the anchorage will have one. And so you borrow that and fill it with gasoline, okay? And then put it in your cabin inside the boat and start it. And then leave the boat and plug up all the air holes everywhere, the door raids, the air vents, the hatches, and wait for the thing to turn off. Hopefully there still will be gasoline in it when it turns off, and it'll have died because it ran out of oxygen and it left carbon monoxide instead. And so you open the boat up. It might take a couple hours for that to happen, by the way. Open the boat up. Carbon monoxide is lighter than air. It floats out. And anything that was in there that was living won't be living anymore.
Hmm. There you go. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You've helped a lot of people, I'm sure. Liz is next in Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I had a question for Allison. She talked a little bit about how she became a sailor, but I'm wondering if there are things that her parents did to encourage her to continue to love sailing. We have 11-year-old twin daughters on our sailboat, and they're very much looking forward to taking their summer classes with Allison at the Sailing Center this summer as well.
Well, something my parents always did was they treated me as if I was an adult on the sailboat all the time. They made sure I was an important part of the crew. I was never just, oh, let's bring Allison and Whitney, you know, if we can find a babysitter. It was, they wanted us to be part of this community and the crew especially. And they always had us, even the littlest jobs on the boats, they would assign us one little job, and that was our job. And it made us feel as if we were indeed part of the crew. We had a role on the boat, and having that role makes you feel important. It makes you feel needed, and that is something essential on a boat, you know, and it's teamwork, and so you need that teamwork to get around the course. And also we just had fun. It was you know, you have to make sailing fun. And it's not very hard to make it fun. So, you know, we always have music on. We're telling stories, things like that, that just make you enjoy being out on the water. You know, we get a little sunburn. You know, win a few races, lose a few races. It doesn't matter. As long as you're part of the team, you're having fun, you love the people you're around. I think that's how my parents got me hooked on sailing. Just making me feel important.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Liz, very much for the call. Amy in Appleton is next. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I missed the first 15 minutes of the program, but I was curious about the pirate situation. How do you protect yourself against such a situation?
Nancy.
Yeah, actually, I have a whole presentation I do on those pirates. The first thing is that you don't go where the pirates are known to be. Okay, and right now the bottom of the Red Sea is a place I would just, as in my sailor brain, I'm thinking of that as a permanent hurricane season right now. And I don't take my boat into hurricane season. So you got to go around South Africa if you're going around the world. There are pirates other places too, like in the Caribbean and a few other spots. And there's a good website that you can look up at where the pirate attacks have been on recreational boats. And I'll just tell the audience that it's called noonsight.com, which is noonsight like a noon sextant site. So it's noonsite.com. And they're the repository of people reporting attacks. So if you are in a situation you think it's pirates coming to attack your boat, you want to keep them off your boat if you can.
Right.
And one way to do that could be with a flare gun. And to kind of get a flare into their boat. I want to make sure they're pirates first.
Mm-hmm.
If they're shooting at you, they're probably pirates. Okay? If they're not, you can't be sure.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you can keep them off the boat, that's good. If you can't, then you need to make the inside of the boat sort of like a citadel and lock yourself in there. And if you failed in that and they get below, then I would simply cooperate. It's rare that they want to take your life. They usually want other things that you have, and none of that is worth your life.
No, of course not.
So, here's the problem, though. When we get cornered like that, we get in this fight or flight reaction, and there's no place to flee to. Mm-hmm. So people tend to want to fight, and that's probably going to escalate things and make it worse.
Yeah. All right, the conference is this Saturday. People should go to the Facebook page and get some more information. You're going to be giving a keynote, Nancy?
Yes, I am.
Great. All right, and are you going to be speaking, Allison?
I don't know if I'll be speaking, but I will definitely be there.
Great.
Good, we can meet each other, Allison. That'll be great.
Yeah, yes. That would be very nice. Well, I'm so delighted both of you were with us. It was just, you know, it's just in time. The season is about to begin, and it's something that people don't think of doing, and you can do it. You can be a sailor.
Everybody.
People can be sailors.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, there you are. You're a sailor. It's a pretty cool thing to be. Thank you, Nancy. All the best to you.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thanks, Allison, so much for being with
you.
Us. Good luck on everything that's coming up this summer.
Thank you.
Yeah. Our thanks to our guest this hour, Nancy Early is the conference keynote speaker, and she has circumnavigated the world twice, actually. Allison Kent is a senior in high school at Brookfield East and is a member of Team Rafiki, which is competing in this year's J30 North American Championships. Thanks to Brett Jaspers for producing this show, and thanks to Brett Jaspers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. The conference, the Midwest Women's Sailing Center, is this Saturday at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center, McKinley Marina. Classes for those of you who would like to learn how to sail, to those of you who are big-time sailors and want to make your skill even better. So, that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock here on the Ideas Network.
By the light pole, but would not scare my pony on my boat out on the sea. And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, riding on my boat, and we could all together go. up on my